board.
Okay, I've prepared the statement for the budget hearing, from which I'm going to read. This is a budget message for the amended 2022 and proposed 2023 budgets, operations and maintenance. A total of $6,530,000 in revenues is anticipated for fiscal year 2023, budget period January 1st to December 31st, 2023. This includes parish and ad valorem taxes, state revenue sharing, interest, grant funds, charges for photocopies, gifts, and fees. The 2023 budget will enable the library to provide innovative educational and cultural programs, research resources, and learning materials to continue serving the needs of the Livingston Parish citizens. This budget will allow the library to maintain its buildings and grounds and fund capital projects. The budget reflects increases in database subscriptions, electronic collections, and a 3% cost of living increase and performance adjustments. In 2022, in spite of the post-pandemic challenges, the library continued to deliver high-quality programming to the public. It maintained the appropriate staff levels to allow for an uninterrupted delivery of services in support of the 6 facilities. The library's programming expenses increased in 2022 due to the increased patronage and large events such as a book festival and Comic-Con. In 2022, the library system continued to upgrade technology and equipment, expanded its book, periodical, audio, video, and electronic collections, and made significant repairs and improvements to the library branches. The cost of utilities increased significantly due to high energy costs. The cost of maintaining library facilities also increased due to the building's age. In 2022, the library introduced new services and partnerships which allowed patrons free access to the National World War II Museum, Louisiana State Parks, and other cultural and educational, historical, and recreational destinations. The library continues to expand services within its state-of-the-art digital media lab. The library will continue to provide traditional services such as story times, summer reading program activities, workshops, lectures, and music performances. The estimated total revenues for 2022 fiscal year are $6,649,106. The estimated operating expenditures are $5,912,727. The combined operating and capital expenditures for the budget year 2022 are estimated at $7,251,492. The library's revenues did not exceed expenditures. The remaining 2022 net income balance of $736,000 will be dedicated toward capital projects and transferred to the capital projects fund. The 2022 fiscal year capital outlays are estimated at $1,338,766 due to construction, facility improvements, and technology purchases. The 300,700,000 of these expenditures will be reimbursed in 2023 according to the federal grant agreement. In 2022, the library replaced aging carpets. We are planning to replace aging carpets at the Denham Springs, Walker, and Watson branches. The main branch and the administrative offices received light fixture upgrades. A total of $732,000 in expenditures for capital projects is anticipated for fiscal year 2023. It includes $177,000 for planned carpet replacement at Albany, Springfield, and South branches. The previously approved RFID upgrade is reflected in the equipment and totals approximately $150,000. Also, the previously approved purchase of library vehicles is planned for 2023. The construction of the South Branch Trail is also planned to take place in 2023. The library also needs to expand the back parking lot at the main branch to allow for parking and the safe turnaround radius of the library's bookmobile. These large capital projects will be paid for by the Capital Projects Fund. These funds are dedicated to construction and improvement projects, the acquisition of furniture, equipment, technology, and an opening day collection for future building programs. In 2023, the library will continue its mission of providing recreational, cultural, and educational resources to all members of the Livingston Parish Library, to all members of the Livingston Parish community.
Thank you, Giovanni. We'll now open remaining to any comments you would like to make concerning the budget. Anyone? Well, this public hearing is now closed. I'd like to open now the regular meeting. Call to order. Roll call, Giovanni.
Ronnie Benkas.
Here.
Kathy DeGeneres.
Here.
Ivy Graham.
Here.
Debbie Hansen.
Here.
Stephen Link.
Here.
Melissa Anderson.
Here.
Aaron Sandifer.
Here.
Leighton Ricks.
We need to approve the minutes of the July 19th and September 20th meetings. Anyone like to hear them read?
I do have a question about the minutes. I noticed in the November meeting, we have all of the minutes of people speaking. They're out of order, but we do not have that for the July meeting. Why is that?
We didn't expect the amount of people to be at the meeting, and we didn't take accurate notes of people's names. I couldn't. The recording does not reflect clearly who spoke. So to mitigate the fact that the minutes probably didn't include all the discussions in detail, we provided access to the audio recording so someone could follow the minutes if they needed to, or review the entire board meeting in detail through the audio. Typically, the minutes don't require, to my best knowledge, the minutes don't require the full account of all that's been said in the meeting. It's a brief account of general description of discussion. That's why.
Does it make a difference if I have a list of all of the names that spoke and to defer this and turn those names in?
We can certainly, I can also provide an audio transcript of the recording if it makes it easier. We can maybe upload that to the website.
Okay.
The audio transcript may not have, the audio transcript is generated automatically by a computer, so it will have approximately or close to what was said because of the extensive amount of public comments. So maybe we can do that to accommodate the request.
I think that would be sufficient.
Okay.
We need to motion to approve the minutes.
I move that we approve the July and September meeting minutes.
Second.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Roll call,
do you
want
Ronnie Benkas? Yes. Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. President, at this time I'd like to move to amend our agenda as presented to address some issues that have been emailed us in the last 24 hours?
That requires, what, two-thirds?
A majority vote.
Majority.
To create a new item on the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A motion has been made to create a new item on the agenda.
A new item would be status of Aaron Sandiford's position on this board.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, no.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
A vote?
It's been moved and seconded.
Can I speak?
I guess, yes, just doing a motion, yes, for sure.
On what grounds do you remove me from the board?
I'm not asking to remove you from the board.
What was your motion?
To discuss your status.
Okay.
What do you mean by status?
To discuss her status as a board member for the library.
As has to do with the recent council appointment or just status period?
The recent council appointment, the emails back and forth from legal that haven't been clear, that possibly we need to take further action to make sure we're all moving forward in a manner in which we are supposed to by operation of law.
All of it's been moved and seconded.
Roll call. Ronnie Benkes?
No.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
No.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Erin Sandifer?
Abstain.
What?
I think I have to abstain.
Oh.
I can't vote for myself.
What is that?
We move on. I'm asking a question. Do you want me to move on?
What was the number? I didn't.
We had two no's, one abstain. Yeah, I think you said we need to have a.
I think we need majority.
Majority. Right. Which we don't.
I think that creates a majority.
Probably. Okay,
two-thirds.
That's not two-thirds. All right. Okay, move on. I want to, before we move on, I have to, item 6H on the agenda. Further discussion of motion by Debbie Hansen supporting library policy in 9-2022 library board of control meeting. This was a motion, and it passed, and according to Robert's Rules of Order, and the state parliamentarian told me that we cannot discuss this issue. After it's been passed, case closed, you go on. So there can be no further discussion on this. This item was put in here by mistake, my fault, take full responsibility. And so, this item, 6H, will be pulled from the agenda. Okay? All right, we have public comments on the items on the agenda.
My name is Brian Clemens, 3438 Robbie Lee Drive. Normally I like to speak off the cuff, but in order to be as succinct as possible, I prepare a statement. Concerning the minutes of your last meeting, which were just accepted, I sat here last month and observed this board receive a request from one of your board members for a copy of the documentation pertaining to a book reclassification request and the personnel who would rule on such a request. The request was made as a motion and was defeated 4-2. I wish to make it known that I have contacted the State Ethics Board concerning this action. Apparently, four of you feel you can exclude other board members from full participation of board actions. I would strongly suggest you re-examine the action taken last month in this regard as a matter of old business and rectify the error. Our form of government is a republic, which has one definition as a group with a certain equality among its members, according to Oxford Languages. Yet the action taken last month had nothing to do with equality. Instead, it was a display of elitism. It is well within your charter to vote upon actions taken by this board, but that is based upon the assumption that all information is made available to each and every board member. Tom Clancy once said, "The control of information is something the elite always does, particularly in a despotic form of government. Information, knowledge is power. If you can control information, you can control people. Again, I strongly suggest this board reconsiders the action taken last month as a matter of old business and corrects this said action. I trust you will understand that a failure to do so will continue to be pursued with the State Ethics Board, and it will be perceived as arrogance. This board crossed a line, and this board needs to get back across that line. All of you are equal, and you need to act like it publicly. Thank you.
Whenever I asked to speak a while ago, it's because Ms.
Graham,
I'm sorry. You brought something to the agenda that has to be posted 24 hours in advance to the public. So what you did was a violation of the open meeting law. And so that should not be addressed at all. It should have been brought to everybody, and it should have made an addendum on this new agenda item of page that we were given a while ago. So that information that you were given, or the emails or whatever, that should be public information also, according to public information laws. So if I do a records request, according to the Sunshine Law, those are available to the people also. So I just wanted to let you know that we have a right to this information, and it shouldn't just be brought on right before the meeting, because there are the bylaws and everything that you're supposed to do before a public meeting. So I just wanted to, you probably know that already, but I just wanted to reiterate that to the rest of the board members so they didn't know that. Thanks.
Anyone else?
My name is Kelsey Sibley. I am a resident of Walker, Louisiana. I am a lifelong patron of this library system. And I want to talk to a couple of items that I saw on the agenda. First, item 6E, discussion of electronic media access. My assumption is that this is a direct response to an article, or I'm not going to call it an article, a personal blog post about some of the electronic services that we offer here at this library, in particular access that children have to those services. As with everything in a library, I would like to remind everyone in the room that it is for the public, and therefore restricting it is censorship. We've had this conversation over and over again. I'm tired of it. I'm surprised none of you are. But discussions around monitoring and reviewing the collection development and collection review committees are gross oversteps of the board's collective power. The library staff are educated. They have degrees in this. They know what they're doing. Proper collection development, including but not limited to shelving practices, purchasing and reviewing question to comment. That is why we have policies and procedures in place. As board members, you know what those are, and if you don't, maybe you shouldn't be on the board. The use of buzzwords in this particular article, like pornography, smut, children's erotica, which is not a thing, are meant to garner specific reactions from those who are not familiar with the source material that is being targeted, specifically from an outside agitator whose goal it is to defund our public library system. The restriction of public electronic media access that's mentioned in said blog post by the outside agitator is a new attempt at censoring our library's collections and restricting the reach of public service. It's imperative that we note that the Canopy site has an option for parental controls, and parents are able to opt out of electronic resources. You can locate that information on the library's website if you don't have it. If you are willing and available to set parental controls on your home computers, your children's television streaming services, your cell phones, and other electronic media, the electronic media that the public library offers is no different. That's your job as a parent, not our library systems. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Mr. Ronnie.
if I could just interrupt just 1 minute. Do we have the 3 minute rule? Do we have the 3 minute in place?
I'm going to waive that. That's my prerogative.
Good evening. My name is Amanda Jones, and I'm a 44-year resident of Watson. As a librarian myself who has spent the last 2 years speaking nationally and internationally against censorship, I have also been keeping close tabs on school board and library board meetings in my home parish and the upheaval in nearby Lafayette and Tangipahoa parishes. I continue to stay up to date on the board's agendas and the going-ons in my parish because, after all, like I said, I live here. It is my community, too. I have a vested interest in my community. I am a mother of a child in our community. I work in our community and have been a library card holder since I was 5 years old. As to the agenda items, I'm sure it is no coincidence that an agenda item to discuss electronic content was posted the same day a political group posted an inaccurate blog filled with inaccuracies. The blog post, of which the content, I'm guessing, will be brought up tonight, states that electronic sites like Canopy allow children to access inappropriate content. What it failed to state is that Canopy and the majority of the other platforms have parental controls, and any parent can access and control it. These are similar controls that I would expect every parent to utilize with their own child, like they do with their child's access to TV streaming apps and the internet. Parents can also even opt out of having their children having access to electronic content, and that information is very clearly stated on our public library's website. As a librarian, I know the value of e-cards. They afford us the ability to access databases for research, audiobooks for children with dyslexia, and e-books in Spanish for our children who speak English as a second language. Just this past week at school, I researched Eleanor Roosevelt, planted animal cells, and the Bill of Rights. Digital platforms like Trueflix, ScienceFlix, World Book Online, Biography Reference Center are invaluable resources for our children, and I would hate to see those databases and e-content taken away from students who use it for research and to learn. I would also hate to see the Spanish resources taken away from systematically marginalized and underrepresented Latinx populations in our community. Once again, it is my hope that no one on the board is trying to skirt policies and procedures already set in place by the trained and educated public librarians with library science degrees that work for our award-winning public library system. It doesn't take a genius to see what is going on. Our public library has become a target, and our director and library workers who work hard for this parish are being maligned. It is absurd to suggest that our public librarians are trying to sneak pornography to children. Again, I will repeat, if a parent doesn't want their child to access e-content, fill out the form that is quite plainly posted online, follow the procedures already in place, and your own child's access will be removed. Or be a parent and utilize the parental controls just like you do for your own child's access to YouTube, TikTok, and other websites. The idea that children are bypassing Google to use their library card to access pornography is ridiculous, and fake outrage is a smokescreen to defund our public library. As a parent, I do not want my child's access removed. She downloads ebooks and audiobooks daily, and I will fight for my child's rights to access electronic content. Also, I will state for the public record that taking a stand against censorship efforts does not mean you promote pornographic materials or push erotica on children. Taking a stand against censorship means you believe in the policies and procedures already in place created by the professionals and believe that no one small faction of society has the right to push their beliefs and limit access for the rest of us. Many of us in this community are paying attention to the efforts to destroy our public library, and we will continue to do so. Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight.
Anyone else? All right. That closes the public comment period. Unfinished business? There is none. New business? Giovanni?
Okay. If the board remembers, for this year's, last year when you approved the library's budget, you approved the replacement of the carpet at the Denham and Watson branches. We received the quote, and we're going to proceed. And as a matter of precaution, we had the Denham Springs Walker Branch slab and the Watson Branch slab tested for excessive moisture that would prevent the carpet to be properly adhered to the concrete. And when we received the results, the moisture content was high. And to discuss this matter, I invited Carl Francella with Sun Interiors and Kara Brown with Unit Design to help us understand this issue and kind of present our options to the board. At this moment, I'd like to...
Good evening, I'm Tara Brown. This is Carl Franzella from Sun Interiors. The results on Walker came in high. So I sent them to the manufacturer, and they said we cannot install that carpet with their adhesive or anybody else's adhesive. Their option that they came up with was to use tactiles, which are tabs that join the tiles together, not to the floor, so it's almost like a floating floor. The only problem is that you can't have rolling traffic, and when we try to move those shelves, they're going to be on rollers, jacked up with hydraulic jacks, moved over to get the old carpet up, prepare the floor, put the new carpet down. They don't know if their tabs will hold the carpet in place when that happens. The second and most important is the moisture in the slab could eventually reach 100%. Right now, in places, it's 95, 96. It shouldn't be over 73 or 74. It should be the same as the temperature inside the building, which means you've got moisture underneath coming up through the concrete. So once it hits 100%, then you're going to get condensation underneath that carpet tile. That water then could be a breeding ground for mold and mildew with the old adhesives that are on the slab from the carpet that's down there now, which gives you a much bigger problem. The other solution is to not do the carpet at all and just leave it and take the carpet that you bought for that and use it somewhere else, or get Carl's company, who does moisture mitigation, to come in and which is very expensive. Roughly 15,000 feet, 16,000 feet over there, $10 a foot, it's $150,000, give or take. It would take, we figured, a week for each side probably to do it. You've got to move all the shelves out, pull the carpet up. Carl can tell you what's involved in it, but it's shot blasting.
And mechanically abrading, you're using a grinder and or shot blast, and you've got to get it to a profile. The old adhesive's got to be removed, and you've got to get a profile. It's a concrete surface profile number 3. That way the pores of the slab are open to receive a two-part epoxy. The epoxy, what it does basically is covers the floor so no moisture can come back up through. Then from there, you've got to self-level it anywhere from eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch, an average of 3/16 of a self-leveling product. Then at that time, we're turning over to Ms. Tara to put the floor down. But the whole idea is to repress the moisture so it's not penetrating, coming through down the line, and then you have a problem where you've got to replace the carpet and start all over again. This is just recommended by the manufacturers, so we just follow their recommendations.
If you don't do anything, just leave your carpet down. Eventually, you'll have to do it eventually because the carpet, I guess, will wear out. But if you decide to gamble, which some owners do, of course, not public bodies so much, I'm talking about private individuals, they'll say, okay, I'm going to gamble. Put the carpet down. If it fails, it fails. Or I'm not going to be here long enough to worry about it. Problem is, once it fails, you still have to then go in and spend the money to mitigate, but you've lost the carpet that you just paid for and the labor to put it down. And then so you have to buy a new carpet and go all over. So it's a major, major operation when it fails. If you put it down and it doesn't fail, but you get moisture underneath and you get the mildew and the mold and you start smelling kind of that musty smell, and then you get a lawsuit, that could be millions. So it's definitely something that the board has to decide on what to do. Because we're going to go ahead and do the other Watson Monday, because their slab came out fine, which was really surprising that Watson and Walker built about the same time. The moisture barrier at Walker, something happened to it. Watson's okay. Their readings are like 73, 72. One was a little higher, but that can be an anomaly. But Walker, out of 17 tests, 11 were too high, and 5 of those were in the 90s, pushing their way up to 100. And we've had no rain, basically, for months. So once you get a lot of rain, then you're going to get even more moisture coming up. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's something that y'all have to decide. What you want to do, talk to legal counsel, see what they think. Look at your budget, you know, decide whether you just forget about Walker for now, address it some other time, take the carpet and Walker and use it at one of the other places.
This epoxy sealant, how long would that last?
Pardon me? How long do they last?
Oh.
I've never heard of that.
Another problem.
I think they give guarantees of warranties of like 10 years or 15 years, but I've never heard of anybody ever having to replace it.
And we'll be happy to get that documentation from this tower if you need to have it. There's 3 major manufacturers with the moisture control products, Ardex, Bostik, and Shonox, and we'll work with all 3. But again, we can get that information in writing.
And they're major, major companies. And this happens all over the United States. And we've both been in the business forever. Oh. I started in 64. We never had any moisture problems back then. And people say, well, why do we have them now? Why is it a multi-billion dollar business? It's because back then we had asbestos. We had solvents in the glue. We had a lot of broadloom, not carpetile, but broadloom. So moisture wasn't an issue. I mean, you put down a tile floor like this with asbestos tile and black glue, you could have a flood in here, 3 feet deep. Water goes out, the floor stays down. Now, you can spill a glass of water and it comes up. Because the glues aren't what they used to be. The materials in the carpet are not what they used to be. So, it's a whole new ball game now. So, and any building that's really 20 years or more old now probably does not have a moisture barrier that's intact. Newer buildings, I would think 15 years and newer, should have an intact moisture barrier. In fact, 25 years ago, they used Visqueen, basically, just, you know, like saran wrap. But now they, you know, use something a lot thicker. So when you get ready to do a building that is an old one, know that you're going to have a moisture mitigation issue, because even if your tests come out okay, if there is no moisture barrier intact, those test results are only good for that one day. They could change the next week. So there's no guarantee on all the buildings. So it's something to think about when you're doing the budgeting for future buildings. It's very expensive. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's where it is.
So the epoxy is used for water mitigation, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it keeps water from coming through.
And you're saying there is no guarantee for that?
But there is a guarantee for that.
We'll get that in writing.
Okay.
It could be a minimum of 10 to 15 years, and then it would be 5 years.
I'm talking about the moisture.
Get it in writing for
the intact barrier underneath. You know when you build the building, you see and put the Visqueen?
Yes.
We call it Visqueen, but it's a, you know. It used to be 4 mil, now they're using 12 mil. And once they put that down, that's supposed to keep the mud, the water in the mud, from coming up into your concrete. Problem is, a lot of times when they put that plastic sheet down, they start walking on it, or they'll run a forklift across something and they break, put holes in it. So that's when you can find the water will come up wherever it can find its way. And just over the years, when you've got your flower beds and stuff, and your watering systems, if they're built too high, if your watering system comes, you'll get water coming in from the side of the slab. So it's just a big issue now.
Does that guarantee come from your company? Or
it comes from the manufacturer. I'm a contract dealer. I'm a commercial dealer, almost 50 years in business, and we represent their products.
But in your experience, when something happens, how good have they been to take care of it?
They're multi-billion dollar companies. Ardex is out of Germany. Shonax in Europe as well. The single largest issues, as Tara said, that we have in our industry today is moisture issues with failing floors, not being able to do the proper mitigation, which is what Ms. Tara said. And again, a lot of people are just, you know, turning their head. We're not telling you what to do. We just want to bring the facts. And then we can back it up with documentation. And then the board will make the right decision. We're just here to educate. But it is a factor in our industry that's very high on the radar right now. So I'm very grateful for your time. Ms. Tara, anything else you want me to add?
No. And got any other questions? It's mostly, besides being an issue of having a problem with your floor, like with mold and mildew, is liability. That's why the manufacturer will not stand behind any warranty at all because of that. We won't stand behind anything if we put down a floor knowing that there could be a failure. So we have to get disclaimers all signed by everybody and then cross your fingers that nothing happens. But it's hard to cross your fingers when you're a public entity because then you're easy picking for somebody who wants to file a lawsuit.
Ms. Tara, I have a question. With the existing situation with moisture, is it possible that the existing carpet will fail? We'll have those issues with high content.
It could. It was not, when they lifted up the tiles to do the testing, they saw no signs of moisture. Because normally you can see it, especially with the glue. The glue will become watery and go back into its natural state. Then it comes seeping up through the cracks in the floor. And they didn't see any of that. But that could be the glue that was used back then, which was probably Henry 630, the old blue glue. And the backing on the carpet back then is different than the backings that are used now. So it might be fine. It might be letting enough water come through. If enough water can come through that's coming up, you don't have a problem. It's when the water comes up and the carpet on top won't let it come out. So it stays there underneath. And you know what mildew is. That's what you get. So that carpet might not fail. It's just that you can't keep it down for the next 20 years because it starts getting ugly. Any other questions?
Thank you very much. Very informative.
Thank you.
I would like to add, if I may, that the carpet that the Dimmitt Springs Walker brings will be 17 years old, comes 2023. It's the facility with the most traffic in our library system that sees anywhere from 150 to 180 to 200,000 visitors a year. And we've reached a point where the carpet is old and, for better upkeep of our facilities, you know, the reason behind it was to replace the carpet to present the best facilities to our public that we can. Unfortunately, we came across this issue. And I also would like to mention that I'm going to have to do some research. However, whatever decision the board makes tonight, I need to make sure that the services provided by your company, whether they fall under services or purchases of, like, procurement of products,
I think you can go still under state contract.
Okay, if you are, yeah.
With Tarkett, which is your carpet manufacturer, they do have it in there. I looked through their stuff, and they do have moisture mitigation included in their
state contract. Okay.
So you wouldn't have to put it out
to the
public. When Carl's main man that does this is in Kentucky, when he gets back in town, he will do a formal price of what it's going to cost and how many days it would take to do, so you can have that for your information to know, okay, this is what we're looking at. But he's out of town right now.
And one last thought. Well, it's all about life cycle. Depending on how many years you got from the investment from the last go-round, in terms of when you bought that product. Now, whatever that cost is, incorporate that, take that out 15, 20 years. It's a little bit more on the front end, but life cycle wise, it costs you less down the road. And I'm not trying to sell, I'm just trying to let you know life cycle is in every product today. There's a different price, a different cost, different quality. Is that okay, Ms. Carr?
Yeah. Okay.
Alright, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
How would the board like me to proceed?
Well, I think we need additional information on the final cost, right?
Since we already purchased the carpet, I would potentially recommend that we replace the carpet at Watson, replace the carpet at the Albany Springfield branch, because they are slated to have it replaced in 2023. Once we get all the final details and numbers for the Denham Springs Walker branch, and the most accurate quote, I will approach the board in January, I'll present the numbers, and then perhaps get your permission to move forward with moisture mitigation then.
Okay. Everybody
satisfied with that?
Yes,
sir. Okay, the next item, 6B, approve the adjusted fiscal year 2022 operating 2022 capital project budgets.
I don't have anything to add.
Anybody have anything to add? Need a motion.
Does it need to be a motion? Both at one time or separately?
I make the motion to approve the adjusted 2022 operating budget and 2022 capital projects budget as presented.
Second.
I second.
And moved and seconded, Giovanni.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Ronnie Benkamp?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Henson?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
Abstain.
All right, item 6C. Approve the proposed fiscal year 2023 operating and fiscal year 2023 capital projects budget. Any motion?
Okay, I'll move that we approve the proposed fiscal year 2023 operating and fiscal year 2023 capital projects budgets.
Second. Moved and seconded. Giovanni.
Ronnie Benkamp.
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres.
Yes.
Ivy Graham.
Yes.
Debbie Henson.
Yes.
Stephen Link.
Yes.
Melissa Anderson.
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer.
Second.
All right, item 6D. Dedicate funds to capital projects.
As I mentioned in my earlier report, and is reflected in the budget, approximately an estimated $736,000 will be of net income, of which $222,000 was the reimbursement or settlement once we completed our suit for the damage to the Denham Springs Walker branch. This is why the number is higher than usual. It seems like they were carrying over more, but it's in part because a portion of that net income is due to the settlement funds that we received. So, and as you know, the library has a long-term capital projects plan, which funds all of our large outlays, capital outlays, whether it's construction, replacement of carpet, replacement of HVAC units, something that the library cannot typically afford to pay for out of its operations budget. And so this net income of $736,000 that we're carrying over I would like to request the board to dedicate it toward future capital projects, in which will be transferred to the CAFCO Projects Fund.
Have a motion.
I make a motion to approve the capital outlay funds as presented in our budget.
Second.
I second.
Been moved and seconded.
Ronnie Binkas?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Henson?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
I'm going to abstain again.
Item 6E, electronic media access.
That's my agenda item, and I put that on the agenda. In October, I received an email. I guess it was a blanket email to patrons of the Newton Harris Library, and it was promoting movie and video apps, Hoopla and Camera. We've used the library apps, Hoopla and a few others over the years. I'm very familiar with Hoopla. I've downloaded Canopy and. There was no screen to prevent children from viewing very explicit pornography videos, straight up hardcore things. And so then I took my son's library card and logged in with absolutely no screen, no problem, going right to it. It is extremely explicit in language and nudity and sex acts, and so our collection development policy says that the library board is responsible for this. And what are we going to do about this? What are we going to do? What can we do?
I believe we got an email about that today. Mm-hmm. About Canopy from Giovanni.
I didn't receive an email. I have.
I can read it if you like as a statement. So, as a library or the library staff, we're not aware of this film or of these documentaries in our collection. Neither did we know that these documentaries were categorized or in our collection under graphic nudity. And once they were discovered based on the publication that was posted online, we promptly removed it. I want to make an emphasis that the library staff did not curate any specific titles or select these documentaries for our collection. The collection of films comes to us from Canopy as a whole package, all 30,000 movies and children's cartoons and movies for children. The documentaries in question have been removed from our collection because they do not fit our collection development standards or policy. The Canopy app, as well as its web interface, can indeed be locked down by a parent. The app can be restricted to children's titles only and can be protected by a PIN number. In other words, once restricted, a child cannot exit from the kids mode to view any of the adult audience titles. When we reached out to Canopy, they have promised us that they will periodically check their collection for sexually graphic content and will remove it. Canopy also discovered that most, if not all, of such content comes from one supplier, and I have asked them to turn off their documentaries completely from being displayed in our collection. And overall, our Canopy app will exclude graphic nudity from the collection from now on.
I would like to state for the record that I have my email open right now. I did not receive this email. It is not in my inbox. I appreciate that immensely, Mr. Taroff. I am singing your praises over having that removed. Thank you very much.
Further discussion?
I absolutely did not get the email.
I apologize for that. That was my mistake.
Can I ask when that was done? Because I checked yesterday and it was still available.
We were working on this morning because it took us, when we found out, late last, yesterday and could not get in touch with the vendor. So the staff are working on it this morning.
What I don't understand, that's a pretty important email.
It was my mistake. Usually when I email the board, there's a group setting. It goes to the entire board. I'm going to have to check my email and maybe work with you and see if it got stuck in junk code.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It was not intentional.
This is really sad. How many kids have viewed porn already from the library website? And it wasn't until somebody brought it up that y'all decided to change policy the day of the meeting.
No, nothing else.
All right, item 6F, availability of laser cutter to the public.
In the March 15th meeting, we approved a laser cutter printer, and I approved on with the condition that I wanted to make sure that it was available for the public to use. So I wanted an update on that and tell us how we can access this.
We received the laser cutter a couple of months ago, maybe a month ago. We have not yet set it up. The staff have not been assigned to be trained on it. And once they've received full training and safety training to operate this laser cutter, we may be able to offer its services to the public. I do not believe the public will have direct access to the laser cutter because of liability associated with it, because it's an industrial unit, and the potential for, you know, liability is high because without training. But as we do with our 3D printers, the public does not have direct access to our 3D printers, but they're able to submit their 3D designs and then we print it for them. Our vision for this service is similar to our 3D printers, where the public will be able to work with our staff, submit their designs or submit their, you know, models or whatever it may be, and we'll work with them on making it available. We have to develop policies. We have to develop associated costs with this equipment. Train staff and train support staff. So we have to have continuity in place as well. If a staff member who was trained leaves the library, we have to have another staff member who can pick up. So it's going to be a process. I don't have a set date as to when it will become available. We'll just do our best to train our staff and roll it out sometime in 2023.
So it will be accessible
by proxy
by the public with someone there, like the setup at.
Not in person. They'll be able to submit their designs. Because the printer is located in our administrative offices. It's large. It requires active ventilation. So in other words, we cannot place it in any facility because when the laser is in operation, whether it's cutting plastic, wood, or metal, it emits a lot of smoke. So we have to have active ventilation to remove that smoke from the facility. So we've built, in our recently expanded building, we've created a space for it where it can actively, you know, ventilate out when it works.
Okay, thank you very much. I've had two groups ask me about this laser cutter printer, so thank you very much.
All right, item 6G, make up its structure of LPL Collection Review Committee and Collection Development Committee.
With this, I know what the policy and procedure manual states. What I don't understand is the makeup of, let me start with the Collection Review Committee. Is it the Challenge Review Committee or the Collection Review Committee? It's been called several different things, and so I need clarification on what it is and where it is in the policy manual, in the procedure manual, policy and procedure manual.
I guess it's the question for me. We do not have the committee makeup, or it's not defined in our policy. It was an executive decision by me, the library director, I guess, to form this committee. It was specifically created to help the administration review those citizens' requests for reconsideration of materials. So the committee does not have a formal policy-driven name, per se. It's just a group of professional librarians that help the director handle those requests as they come through.
How many librarians?
Three librarians at the time, at the moment.
How are they chosen?
Based on their experience with the library system and their work, direct work.
Would this fall under collection development?
No, it's a committee specifically designed or created to review citizens' requests for reconsideration of materials. It's not so much collection development, although those committee members do have collection development duties in general.
Are they the same members that are on the collection development committee?
We do not have a collection development committee per se. We have most of our professional librarians participate in collection development in one way or another. We have a collection development librarians, but also branch managers, youth librarians, other librarians, they all participate in collection development in one way, shape, or form because of their direct duties or their expertise, the area in which they work. There are different criteria for that.
Well, if it's not stated in the policy and procedure manual, how is this committee governed? What dictates that?
Not everything can be... the collection development librarian asks for support or asks for help. Typically with any professional librarian on staff, collection development duties come as expected because that's an expected duty of any professional librarian that works for a public library or school library for that matter. So it's just one of those core competencies and duties that a professional librarian has to help the library to develop its collection.
In the policy manual under collection development, it says it is the responsibility of the board and staff of the library to provide the best possible collection of material within the restrictions of budget and space that can be provided to the citizens of the parish. To meet that responsibility, this policy provides guidelines to be used in the selection of material to be placed in the library. So it is the responsibility of the board. We are responsible for this. In section one, it says the selection of books and other library materials is delegated to the administrative collection development librarian. Are you the administrative librarian in this?
Have to look at the policy. I am the administrative librarian for the library system. But if it refers to the administrative collection development librarian, then it would be the collection development librarian.
Would you like me to... I can pass it to you.
It's
right out of the book.
Would you read it again, please?
Sure. It says, selection of books and other library materials is delegated to the administrative / collection development librarian and through their direction to the professional librarians of the staff as they feel appropriate, as qualified by education and experience.
I understand better now. The way it's written, it says administrative / collection development librarian, By administrative, the policy means director. The director and collection development librarian is a separate position. So in the past, when the library was much smaller, before we had all these beautiful facilities across the system, it was the responsibility of the director back then to participate actively in collection development. And I guess this is just, you know, one of those leftovers from the old times. At the time, right now, at the moment, majority of collection development responsibilities fall to or go to the collection development librarian and the staff as it's outlined in the policy. On occasion, I participate in collection development as well, suggest different titles, so we all share the responsibility.
So in the manual, it's stated that the board is responsible. The board is tasked with delegating to the administrative librarian, but we are still responsible for the decisions that they make. Just making that point in regards to things that we have in our library system, in regards to collections, the board delegates to Mr. Taroff and staff. He's our administrative librarian, correct?
Correct.
I know what the procedure manual states. Perhaps in light of content and what the manual directs, I think it's important for us to know what is going on. We're the responsible party, and because we're tasked with this responsibility, we need to know when these committees meet, is it safe to call them a committee?
There's no formal committee. It's just a general day-to-day business of the library.
So when you meet for a collection review or a challenged book, what is that called?
Oh, yes. If a challenge comes through, then yes, it is my responsibility to call the members of the group or committee, and they meet based on their availability. They coordinate their schedules amongst each other, and they meet and discuss the materials in question.
Okay. So as the responsible, because we're tasked with this responsibility as the Livingston Parish Library Board of Control, we need to know when these committees meet, what is discussed, and possibly attend the meetings, but we need an invitation and an email to that. Can you do that?
That would be a question to the board, because it would probably require the change of policy, I understand it.
Where is this change in policy?
If the board wants to, I guess my response is, if the board wants to form a committee to have the board members directly involved in the selection or review of challenged items, then it's up for the... I cannot direct the board. I cannot tell you to meet or not to meet. I work for the board, so it's up for the board to decide how they want to handle it.
The confusion for me is, where in the policy manual does this need to be changed? If you don't have a formal committee...
What I'm trying to say, again, that I cannot direct or tell the board how to act in reference to those decisions. If you want to participate in the review of those challenge requests, then as a board, you need to decide if you want to be involved.
Okay, so what if we form a policy and procedure committee? Can we form a policy and procedure committee? We can make it up of three board members and our administrative librarian, Mr. Giovanni Terrell. I can't hear y'all.
Didn't we vote on this before?
It was specific. I could go back and read the motion from the last meeting, but it's not the same motion.
What would be the purpose of your committee? What is the task there?
presented?
Because we as a board are responsible for content in the library. And yet we don't know. I mean, do you know when they meet, what they discuss, what are the criteria, how they're chosen?
For the review committee, if a book is being reviewed or challenged, yes, we read out that criteria to be filled out at the last board meeting.
Do you know how that decision was made?
How did that document get created? No, I do not have personal direct knowledge of how that document was created.
There are some things that we probably need to take a closer look at as a board, because we are responsible for those things. And it makes a lot of sense to me to form a board committee to look into election review.
It sounds like overstep to me, because as a board, we are responsible for oversight. We are not responsible to be in the weeds. That's why we hire a director. That's why we hire professional librarians to make those choices and those determinations. And I don't think that having that form of direct involvement is necessary. We are responsible as an oversight, but we're not responsible to be in the weeds.
We're responsible for policy and procedure.
So again,
we don't have to attend the meeting to be responsible for the policy and procedure.
How can we know what's going on? How can we understand?
Because we're informed by Mr. Tyroff.
The books that have been reviewed, we received emails with regard to the status of the review after it was completed.
Okay.
We just haven't received any more. Have you submitted any books for review that you've not found satisfactory?
Well, I didn't fill out the book review form. I submitted it to the board in a meeting. Not necessarily for a formal review, but in hopes that it would get the board engaged to go in the library and look around.
Okay, to get us engaged to go look around, I mean, you can just invite us all for tea one day and we can go walk around the library, but
that would violate open meetings. Sorry, I can't do that.
So
I don't understand.
No, I don't understand what the committee, what purpose your committee is trying to accomplish. I'm not challenging whether or not we should have this committee. You haven't conveyed to me what a policy and procedure committee would do. What would you want them tasked to accomplish?
To know when the committees meet, what is discussed, and to attend the meetings, to be a part of it.
To review.
We are over these committees. We have some serious content in our library system.
You're also over the construction that we have on buildings.
Yes.
Do you go stand out there and watch them construct? Do you help them lay bricks?
No, but I do go look.
It's a ridiculous thought. We hire professionals to do this job. The professionals do their job, and they do it well.
Apparently not.
And
I have a question, Ms. Henson. Do you go and look at any of the libraries when, like, there's an issue with a foundation crack or air conditioning? Do you go look?
That's not.
You depend on other people to tell you?
Yes, I do. And Mr. Tyroff reports about it, and we take his reports as they are.
I can tell you, as a middle school teacher for 30 years, books are clearly labeled young adult because they are adult in content. They're written for teenagers. Would I let my child read them? No. But it's a public school, and it's a public library, And if parents allow their child to read young adult, that is their prerogative. You understand? I've seen parents buy these books at the book festivals for their children. It's a public library, and they are clearly labeled young adult, meaning that they have adult content.
They have pornographic content.
Yes, and adult content.
So you know they have pornographic content in the young adult section?
Yes.
And you're okay with that?
It's young adult. Again, would my children read it? No.
But you're okay with other people's children reading it?
That's correct.
It is not my responsibility to decide what other parents.
Well, sometimes kids get to go to the library as a group from school and everything, and the parents aren't with them. It's a teacher that brings them, and one teacher for like 20 kids, they can't monitor everything that they're reading. But I think what she's talking about is a committee to oversee that, because I think with y'all in the realm of y'all being an organ, a board, do y'all know that y'all could also be sued individually for not having the correct oversight?
The statute says that you will provide oversight. It doesn't say that you will
hand
it off.
No oversight.
It doesn't say you're going to hand it off. Why don't y'all just hand off your jobs on the board to the employees? You're in control.
And I used to serve on the recreation board for District 6, and I went to different contracts and everything else like that. I didn't have to do it, but I did it to make sure that our money was being spent well.
Listen, please. I've allowed this, but I'm going to cut it off now. Mm-hmm. There's no public comment anymore in the meeting. That was in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I think it might get out of hand, so I'm just going to call it off, okay?
Apologize.
All I'm asking for, Mr. Ben-Kaz, is a committee consisting of three board members and our administrative librarian, Giovanni Taroff, to see what's going on. It is our business. We are tasked with overseeing this and being responsible for it. And you know, I just want to state that Louisiana was the fifth state to formally recognize pornography as a public health hazard. Louisiana passed a state resolution declaring pornography a public health hazard for children in 2017. It's serious. I don't understand why anybody would defend this content being in front of children. And back to what I'm trying to do is to establish a committee to look into this. What is the fight?
I don't, you're still not telling me what we're getting a committee to do.
Are you listening?
I am, but you just said a bunch of different things. First, it was a committee to sit in if we have a book review.
Okay.
Then it's a committee to review everything in the library. Now it's a committee because we're upset about pornography.
It's a committee to look into things, Ms. Graham?
What things?
We form a committee that consists of three library board of control members and the administrative librarian to review the policy and procedures committee.
That's not what you've been talking about. We need to put a committee together to review our policy
and procedures? Well, we weren't talking about the things that others brought up on the board either. But
they haven't asked for a committee. I'm just trying to understand what you want, Erin. So
I just stated what I wanted.
Okay.
I would like to make a motion that we form a committee that consists of three library board of control members and the administrative librarian to review policy and procedures.
Do we have a second? There's no second.
A bunch of cowards, man. You got a new testicular report to you for nothing. Pieces of shit. So.
let's go to item 6I, audit engagement contract approval.
Each year, the board approves a contractual agreement with the auditing firm to review and audit the library's financial records. The board has been working with the CPA firm, Baxley and Associates. They are most reasonably priced and have good experience with the library. The requirement to engage, there's a legal requirement by Louisiana Revised Statute 24:513 that requires the board to engage in a formal contract with the auditing firm. And for that purpose, I included a copy of the contract with Baxley and Associates for the board's review. The total cost of the audit for 2022 fiscal records will amount to $11,000. And at this point, I would like to request the board's formal approval to engage with Baxley and Associates for the audit of the library's fiscal records, or financial records.
We have a motion to accept the audit.
We need a motion for the contract approval for the audit firm.
I move that we accept the contract with Baxley and Associates.
Second.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded.
Ronnie Benkes?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Erin Sandifer?
Yes.
Leighton Ricks?
Yes. 6J. Approved change order number 4.
Okay. I need to provide the board with a bit of a background for this change order. This is the last change order for the construction project that we have finished. The change order amounts to, give me 1 second please. The change order amounts to, it's in your packet as well. I believe it amounts to $817. The change order is related to the installation of the properly rated and authorized fire dampers. And this is the last change order. And the cost of the change order is offset by the architect, who has agreed to waive his administrative fees for the change order, for this particular change order. So his cost to administer the entirety. With this change order, we have had 4 change orders. His overall cost to administer or review the change orders and make sure that the installation of construction happens, it's roughly $1,500 to $1,600. So we're saving actually. While the change order seems like an additional cost, but the architect is working with the board and waived his fees to help and finish out this contract. The dampers, and I think I've emailed you and talked to you about it, and I think I received your approvals. But basically, this is a formality. This is a formality. I would like to have it formally approved for audit purposes.
Need a motion to approve the change order?
I move that we approve the change order.
Second.
I second.
We moved and seconded. Giovanni.
Ronnie Benkes?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Erin Sandifer?
Yes.
Passed. Item 6K, elect board officers for 2023.
I would like to propose that Mr. Benkes be his president.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Giovanni?
Can you vote for yourself?
No.
Okay. Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Lee?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
Aaron?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Elect board vice president.
And make the motion that Kathy remain our vice president.
I'll second that as well.
Kathy respectfully declines.
Aww.
I'm not going to. I think somebody younger needs to.
Then I nominate Ivy.
I second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded, Giovanni.
Ronnie Benkens?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Debbie Hansen?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
No.
All right, director's report. Dave, Book Festival.
I'll be very brief. I would like to commend our staff for the amazing book festival that we've had, and to our surprise and pleasure, we had 1,700 people come through our doors and participate in our book festival. It's a very big number for our community, and everybody was eager and happy to see the book festival return. We had a wonderful set of speakers and authors participating. We had the New York best-selling author being our keynote speaker, Kwame Alexander, which drew a lot of people and lots of crowds. Overall, it was a huge success, and we plan to continue on that mission, I guess, next year as well. In fact, we've already began to plan our 2023 book festival and hoping to get just as big of a names and authors participating.
That's good.
I would like to table or postpone the discussion of the library's uses. Well, I'll be very brief on the library uses statistics. We are still preparing the numbers for 2022. But the preliminary numbers show at least a 30% to 40% increase in visits and circulation. So we're still in this post-pandemic slump, but we're definitely seeing massive increases in terms of patron visits, circulation, and things like that. And so I've mentioned here in my on the agenda that we have ideas for new services and goals for 2023. Like I mentioned, we're hoping to continue on a good path and have big programs and innovative services offered to our community. We're looking into, Comic-Con will happen in 2023, and so we're just on our path to continue with the services that the community expects from us. Item C on the agenda is the digital equity pilot. You may be aware that our library was selected to be one of the 5 library systems in Louisiana to participate in a digital equity pilot that is also monitored or is led by the Louisiana Board of Regents, the Commission on Higher Education, the State Library, and the State Office of Broadband. So we are working actively on improving digital literacy in our community, and we're proud of the fact that the library is participating in this pilot. We have a group of approximately 14 to 15 staff members who are our digital navigators. They're actively working with our community, offering in-person classes to improve our community digital literacy rates. So it's an amazing thing that our library is actually participating in this pilot. Was one of the few in the state. On the same note, our library was also selected, one of the few libraries in the country, to participate in the PLA's digital literacy efforts as well. So we have two programs running at the same time. One is our digital equity pilot. Another is the PLA's digitallearn.org. We're trying to maximize our reach and do as much as possible to improve digital literacy in our community. As part of that effort, PLA awarded our library $7,000 of grant money that we're putting toward these digital literacy efforts. The Board of Regents gave our library system $20,000 to further enhance our programming and our efforts And we also utilized the opportunity with emergency connectivity funds, and we received a grant for $300,000, which will further enhance our digital literacy efforts. As part of it, this $300,000 will be used to purchase mobile devices or iPads for people that will participate in our program. It's in part an incentive to invite people to participate. We are also segmenting our program into different components because digital literacy is just a kind of overarching idea, but it takes people further. Once you become more digitally literate, then you can participate in our modern society, whether it's participating in telehealth or being able to do specific research online or do career searches, whatever it may be, whatever the goals may be. As our community participates in these digital equity or digital literacy pilots, as part of the participation, the participants that take our classes, we're still developing the program, but the idea is if a person participates in all of our digital literacy classes, they'll be able to check out an iPad from the library, check out for a certain duration to kind of help them become more literate, more active online, and then again, it's just an incentivization and further enhancement of our services. With that, I will go to item 2 of that report, which kind of refers to the grant that I mentioned. So the iPads that the library will receive have to be protected because they come, you know, as you would buy them at the store, they don't have the proper case or a proper screen protector. And we want these devices to be used by many of our community members. And so we're hoping to buy cases or for the iPads. On average, a case for the iPad may run about anywhere from $10 to $30 a piece. Now, with the fact that we're receiving 1,000 iPads from Apple, we have to incur this extra expense to further protect our investment. So I would like to ask the board at least to approve the purchase of iPad cases. And the purchase should not exceed $30,000. We'll try to stay under the threshold of $30,000, but I'm hoping to spend not more than $15,000. And I'll follow the state required procurement guidelines. If the purchase is below $30,000, I will receive 3 quotes and select the lowest quote. If for any reason we cannot procure iPad cases less than $30 a piece, then we'll issue a request for bids, participate in the public bid process, and select the lowest bidder.
Do you need a motion to have that expenditure?
Yes, please. You would be aware. I think the expenditure is already in the budget.
Okay.
Or maybe the budget may be amended, but just for the record, if you wouldn't mind approving it. I will provide the board with the quotes as they come in.
Okay. I move that we do purchase cases for the protection of the new iPads.
I second it.
It's
been moved and seconded, Giovanni.
Yes. Ronnie Pinkhans?
Yes.
Kathy Generous?
Yes.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Debbie Henson?
Yes.
Stephen Link?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Aaron Sandifer?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, insurance reimbursement, Albany Springfield branch.
I'll be very brief as well. A few months ago, we had an unfortunate event where the lightning struck near our Albany Springfield branch, which caused some of our equipment was damaged. That included several of our telephones, a network switch, and our new HVAC equipment, our chiller. The lightning fried out a control board on the chiller, and we're still waiting for the part to come in. Most of the equipment was replaced or repaired. We're still waiting for the control board to come in. In the meantime, I have submitted all the proper documentation to the insurance company, and they're reimbursing the library for the approximate cost of $11,000 to $12,000, depending on the final cost of all the equipment that was damaged. I just wanted to report that to the board.
Last item.
Okay. Give me 1 second. I have notes here so I can... this is also part of my report. As you know, our library listens very carefully to the needs and wants of our community. And we have been looking for ways to help parents make easier and better selection decisions for their children when using the library. And we discovered that the library can have its integrated library system programmed to allow us to change the checkout settings on young adult or children's accounts. With a parent's authorization, we can block young adult accounts from checking out adult materials. In the same way, juvenile accounts can be blocked from checking out teen or YA materials. And so we can ask our vendor to set all teen or juvenile accounts to, say, expire on December 31st. Once that happens, the parents would need to complete a new library form for their child and choose the child's access to library materials. So we're trying to give some of those settings, I guess, to the parents so they can make the decision for their family. Is this something the board wants to... is this something the board wants the library to explore or activate?
I think it's a good thing myself, sounds like to me.
How exactly would it work, Giovanni?
I'm not very versed on the technical aspects of it.
Okay.
I believe we have to do a lot of programming in the back and ask our vendor to activate certain settings. Initially, I thought it's a simple toggle on the back end that allows us basically to deactivate the accounts and kind of force the renewal. But it's a more complicated process. The vendor will have to do a batch reset on all juvenile and young adult accounts, to where their library cards will expire. And so that will prompt the parents. We'll do proper publicity and inform the parents of what's happening. And so when they come back and basically reapply for a library card to submit that form, they'll be able to opt in or out whether their child can check out adult materials or not, whether their child cannot check out juvenile young adult materials or not. And that gives parents better control over their children's resources. And then, of course, in the back, we'll have to do a lot of technical magic, which we'll, of course, delegate to our knowledgeable librarians that know the system better than I, but they'll make it happen.
Would this be any child with a library card in Livingston Parish, whether it's they came to the library or they got it through their school?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's going to apply to e-cards potentially. I don't have the answer to you right now.
Okay.
Quite possibly. Well, e-cards do not allow for the checkout of physical materials. So they will not be able to check out books anyway. And then talking about e-resources, of course, that's on parents to control the applications and so forth. So, okay, here's the technical expert.
E-cards only have an opt-out.
That's true.
Thank
you. Thank you.
There's a lot of programs that have to go in the back end to create an opt-out. That's what we've been talking to our vendor about. So if the e-cards already have an opt-out, then what would happen is, what eCards already also have, is that a parent has to sign a form right now in order for their child to be able to check a book out from the bookmobile when it visits the school.
Right.
So the parent already has to give a permission for the child to use any card to check out up to 3 materials, because we limit how many materials school children can have due to financial responsibility. Mm-hmm. And then that form would be updated, just like our regular library form would be updated with the questions that Mr. Tarra was saying, you know, what level of access do you want your child to have, then that form would also have that level of access. So that's all of the forms that have currently been signed by kids that use their e-card on the bookmobile would, they would have to re-up with January. Does that answer that question?
I would also like to add that this process may be a little bit disruptive, because it definitely will interfere with, you know, our regular patrons who otherwise would not have to opt in or out. So we'll have to do, again, a lot of publicity and inform our community as to what we're trying to do. But I think it's a good step forward to resolving some of the issues that we may have at the moment. It can be a formal approval for us to pursue it, or just.
Do you need to talk to the vendor more in additional?
It can happen. We can have. There's going to be a lot of technical details.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling like there might be a little bit on the backside.
And my stating December 31st is, of course, I usually think. I may skip certain details that are more obvious to my staff than myself, and I sometimes set unrealistic deadlines. And now we're at little midway through November, and then of course we're going to have holidays and people on vacation. So ideally, I would like for us to have it happen the sooner the better. But I also realize that it may interfere with people's traveling around Christmas or New Year's. So. If we encounter any unexpected obstacles, we'll inform the board and let you know if we're anticipating a delay. We're going to try to make it happen as soon as possible. But Mike requests a question in general. I feel that maybe it's a good, you know, it's a good solution, and I wanted to inform the board. I guess if, I don't know if you want to vote for it, or is it just a simple report, it's up to you.
Anybody?
I think it's a good report.
Yeah,
interested in
how are you going to vote?
I think the additional information for the vendor would be nice.
Okay, I'll keep the board up to date about the technical details and when and how it will happen. We will not keep our public or the board in the dark about it.
Any more discussion?
I have one more question, if I can bring it back up. We discontinued Canopy?
No, we stopped access to the movies that were, or to the documentaries that were in question, or anything that has explicit graphic nudity content.
I am in with my 13-year-olds right now, and it's completely open.
You may see the title, and but it may say, this material isn't available in your institution. So it may show the title, but you may not be able to play this particular documentary. We can definitely explore it after the fact.
You know, that said, I'm glad that it's locked. I'm not clear on it right now because I don't have a cell signal for some reason. The pictures are there. They can see it. So just be aware of that.
If you're using an existing link that someone has provided, it can point to that title. But I don't believe you can find it by searching it. It's been suppressed. In other words, it shouldn't come up in your search. But we'll work with the vendor to just further...
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We had an additional addenda to the agenda, which, by the way, is legal with a two-thirds vote. We can add to the agenda. The state parliamentarian said so. The status of Aaron Sanford's position.
So it's been brought to my attention in the last 24 hours that last week you were nominated or proposed, I'm not clear, to the parish council. And then I've been so lucky to receive various emails in the last 24 hours with questions as to following our home rule charter for the parish of Livingston and the ability to serve on multiple boards. I believe due to the very short nature of this information, there was no clear directive as to what your exact standing was as of this meeting today, as to what it would mean going forward. So, due to the liveliness of our meetings lately, I would make a motion to the board for us to get a full briefing from legal so that we know exactly how to proceed forward and we can all be on the same page and make sure that we're all supposed to be here and all the board members to protect you for whatever future you have going on. I don't know what your status is. And for that sort of purposes, to protect everybody here so that if we're going to continue to have such engagement that we all know what the rules are that we need to play by, which is, I think, part of your concerns, too, with wanting us to look at the policy and procedures. But that would be the motion that I would propose, is just that we get a full briefing from legal to make sure we all know exactly what we're supposed to be doing as a board with regard to multiple board appointments.
From legal, Chris, parish attorney?
Parish attorney, possibly the AG's office. The last email I got said that they needed something from the ethics board. I don't know. I'm getting stuff at the very last minute. And if our next meeting's not until January, I figured that'd give us a lot of time to make sure that we all knew that we were good to go.
Just to give you information on this, in the past, there have been council, parish council, that have served. And I think the verbiage in the home rule charter is shall remain. So I did research that. Please include me on the briefing. I would like to be included on that.
I think we all absolutely should. 1,000%.
Is there opportunity for public comment on this agenda item?
Mr. Run, as a board member on a different parish board, may I speak?
Sure. Go ahead.
We recently dealt with a very similar issue. The parish council appoints members to this board. The parish council has the right to remove members of this board. That power rests with the council, not with this board. And we dealt with that one just last week. I'm on Gravity Drainage 2 board, if you want to know.
Yes. I'll open it up to comment.
I'm not going to walk to the podium, but I've already spoken once. In my belief, and this might be off a little bit, could this be considered a conflict of interest as you would be a part of the parish council, which appoints board members to this board and therefore removes them if you both serve on the board and the parish council? I would be interested to know what that looks like from the Board of Ethics perspective. So my request as a citizen and a patron of the system is that that is added into that report.
That's right. Where you run into a problem is if it's a paid position. You're not allowed to receive pay from both the parish council and some of the boards. The board members are more or less extension of the parish council. They receive a much larger sum per month, but some of the boards are paid, some boards are not. The prohibition is on being paid for sitting on another board. You can't have two paid positions. Or if it is an unpaid position, that doesn't come under the same statute.
I can assure you this is an unpaid
petition. As such, that may hold here, but at either rate, the power does rest with the parish council and not with this board to define your membership.
You can't dual office hold, in other words.
You can ask the parish what they think about it. And by all means, call your councilman and approach it that way.
Ida, your motion was clarification, right?
Just get a brief.
Get a brief from
legal
brief.
To make sure we're all above board.
Anyone in?
Section 2-06C. No council member shall serve on a board or commission of the parish government having administrative or policy-making authority unless the ordinance or state law creating such a board or commission specifies that one or more members of the council shall serve on a board or commission. I would like that looked into, please. Section 2-06C.
This is library policy?
This is Home Rule Charter.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'll second your motion.
All right.
Roll call? Is it a formal decision?
Wasn't voted on it, didn't we?
There's been a motion.
Oh, okay. Second. All right. To say. All right. Roll call. Is that right?
Yes.
I want to be sure here now.
There was a motion to amend the agenda to discuss it, but there was no motion to...
To look into it.
Would that go for Mr. Link too?
I'm already going to be resigning from that.
Okay.
As I've taken.
Congratulations.
Can I rescind that? I don't think I'm supposed to vote on myself. I need a motion to rescind, or I make a motion to rescind my vote. And
well, it wasn't on you. It was just on doing the research.
I know, but okay. I would like that removed from the record, please.
It will be struck from the record.
Thank you.
We have to make.
I think we'll just struggle.
All right. All in favor of adjourning, stand up.